You did.
I'd like to call the Senate Education Committee to order, and I believe we have a quorum present. We have two bills before us. One is a duplicate of a section of the second, and so we have two authors at the table, Senator Cruz and Senator Thompson. I think you, just to give you some guidance, we have quite a few people who wish to testify on these provisions, and we're asking you to hold to approximately 3 to 5 minutes. We may be a little flexible if there appears to be a lot, a shorter list on one side than the other, to be fair. We'll try to respect that, but we may give you a signal and try to move on so that we can get everybody who wishes to testify having their say, as well as allowing time for committee members to raise questions and for responses. So we're going to begin with the section of the bill that deals with the school district contract deadline and penalty repeal, which is the subject of Senator Cruz's bill and is one of the provisions in Senator Thompson's bill. So, Senator Cruz, is Senator Thompson willing to yield to you to introduce that portion?
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, committee members. I know that we have a great deal of work before the committee today, so I'm going to try and make this as short as possible so that we can get to testimony on the bill. Essentially, what we're offering here is a January 15th deadline repealer bill. Now, in statute, when you have negotiations between the school districts, the school boards, and the teachers, every 2 years there is a $25 per pupil penalty if a agreement is not reached by January 15th on that second year. So what we're looking to do with this legislation, and I'll let Senator Thompson add in as well, what we're looking to do with this legislation is lift that deadline, to lift that penalty, allowing for greater negotiation in that process.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Senator Thompson, did you wish to add to that?
I'll add to that as a part of my overall presentation, but I have nothing to add to what he said.
Okay. Are there any questions? Is there anybody that wishes to testify on that provision? Mr. Kronquist had indicated he was.
Could you
say your name for the record. You know the drill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I appreciate the opportunity to offer a few comments. And we would like to thank Senator Cruz and Senator Thompson both for bringing this issue forward. We strongly support it. We fail to see how it makes sense, Madam Chair and members, to penalize students when the adults don't get the job done. And that is basically what happens when we have this $25 penalty in for not reaching a contract settlement. That's money that the district then has to pay, money that otherwise could be used for a whole variety of student programming or in the classroom or other activities, and instead that money is gone. It's sent back to the state. So we hope that you will support this legislation. Thank you very much, Madam Chair members.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the witness or the author? Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, if I might, and perhaps Mr. Kronquist might have the answer to this, how many times has the penalty been applied, and for how much?
Madam Chair and Senator Scheid, I don't know the numbers overall, but just this last round, three of our member districts were hit with the penalty, Minneapolis, Edina, and Intermediate 287. And so that's a $25 per pupil penalty then that the district gets hit with. For example, in Minneapolis, that was an $800,000 penalty.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is that whether it's used or not, school districts are setting it aside in anticipation in case it needs to be used. Is that correct? And if so, is there some point where you're able to free up those funds, or is that's just taken away in case it goes past the January 15th?
Mr. Grunquist.
Madam Chair, Senator Wolf and committee members, that varies probably by district. I don't know that you could say that that's a universally true scenario, but I think some districts now have gotten to the point where if they do envision it's going to be tough round of negotiations, that they just make a conscious decision to try to set aside dollars in case they don't get hit with that penalty. It does have an impact on the bargaining process for sure, and the school budget, obviously.
If there are no further questions, Senator Cruz, I think we are going to lay your bill on the table and go on to discuss the total bill rather than take specific action on the bill at this time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Madam Chair, members, and distinguished guests, thank you for the opportunity to be here. Before we start on the specifics of Senate File 56, I do have an author's amendment that I would like to have distributed and adopted. It's fairly simple. It clarifies and removes some unnecessary language that you'll see in Section 2 of the bill, and it adds a sentence to clarify that the schools will not be shortening the school year for students in response to a temporary salary freeze, so that we'll maintain the integrity of the length of the school year. And I would respectfully move for adoption of the amendment.
Senator Thompson has moved the author's amendment to Senate File Number 56. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill has essentially four components to it, and I have kind of loosely referred to it as the Local Taxpayer Relief Act. And I'd like to address each one of these individually. The first element of the bill is a two-year salary freeze. And there has been some misstatement of this during the course of the discussion of this bill within the media. This is not a freeze specifically directed to teachers. This is a freeze that will apply to all school district employees. And the purpose of it is very simple. The purpose is to provide school districts with additional money over the next couple of years to retain teachers and retain specific programs and the broad-based curricula that's necessary to continue to provide the great education that we do provide here in the state of Minnesota. In talking with my own superintendent, Lakeville area, in talking with school board members from many different areas, it has come to my attention that we are at a point in the local school districts where that is the trade-off. We are either going to have an increase in salaries and we're going to be putting money into that area, or we are going to be able to not do that and use that money to retain teachers, retain programs, and, as I say, retain curricula that are all critical to the success of our students. I want to make clear that this will not cause employees of the district, whether teachers or others, to come out of pocket for things like health insurance. The bill has a specific provision that allows the school districts to increase the contribution to health insurance, for example, in the event that those costs go up. There won't be more out of pocket for the employees within the district. So that is element one. Element two is currently.
Madam Chair.
Senator Monahan.
Madam Chair, this bill is filled with so many things that are different from each other and very complex. Would you like us to discuss and debate each provision separately? I know at some point it is my preference that we, and I would move that we divide the questions, but would you like to do that in a discussion format, or let Senator Thompson do the whole bill and then go back? What's your preference?
Well, Senator Thompson,
Madam Chair, I'll leave that to your discretion. I am happy either way.
Well, I think I'd like to have him present the whole bill so we know what the package is. And I think they're distinct enough that it shouldn't be a problem to be able to focus both the testimony and questions, if we wish, around the individual provisions.
Thank you.
Perhaps starting with questions even before we go into testimony.
Thank you. And there are some different kinds of elements in the bill, but I really do think they're fairly understandable, and certainly the members and I believe the people here who have interest in this legislation are pretty familiar with what this bill contains and the history of these laws. The second thing is currently state law requires that each school district dedicate 2% of its overall budget to staff development. Now, nobody's against staff development. We understand that private businesses do that, school districts do it, other employees are provided with staff development in the public sector. The fact is, it doesn't make sense to have a one-size-fits-all bill, a one-size-fits-all rule that applies to every school district. I mean, clearly, the financial dynamics in districts are different from year to year. What has been done in the past with staff development differs and therefore bears on what should be done in the future. And this, to me, is just something that should not be dictated from St. Paul, but ought to be left to the individual districts. Now, there have been times when this has been waived by the teachers' organizations and the like. But again, this creates a problem in planning for school boards and administrators, and of course, when it is enforced, many times just flat out cost money that again could go into other areas. Third element of the bill is what we refer to as a maintenance of effort, and that applies to school counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, alcohol and chemical dependency counselors. And what this what legislation currently provides members is that you cannot, as a school district, decrease the amount of effort, in other words, money, personnel, that you're currently putting into that category of employee. You are stuck with a floor at the level that you currently exist, regardless of the changing student requirements, regardless of the changing student numbers, regardless of the varying financial circumstances within your school district. Once again, this, in my view, comes down to an issue of who should control the decision of how many school nurses, counselors, psychologists, chemical dependency counselors are contained in any one school district, and does that number need to go up? Does it need to go down? And I would point out that while certainly this is an attempt to kind of create a base floor, it also, to some extent, creates a ceiling. Because at this point, administrators are rightfully concerned to add employees within these categories because they know that they're stuck with those numbers in the future, regardless of the changing need. And that seems not to make sense. The fourth element is the one that my colleague Senator Cruz spoke about before he left here. And the only thing that I would add to that is when you look at this $25 per student penalty for failure to negotiate the contract by January 15th, the idea, the rationale I've gotten from my opponents on this issue is, well, we need to do something to create a sense of urgency to get these contracts done. Well, number one, the sense of urgency could be the deadline. But number two, if we're going to create a sense of urgency, it shouldn't be done in a way that artificially and arbitrarily creates a higher level of bargaining power on one side of the transaction than the other. I mean, obviously, if you have Party A and Party B negotiating a deal, and if you don't meet a certain deadline to get it done, Party A is assessed some sort of fine or penalty that increases the bargaining position of Party B. And it strikes me in this situation, it's relatively arbitrary. If somebody's going to be penalized for failure to negotiate a deal by a specific time frame, both sides should be, so that both sides have equal incentive to come to the table and get the deal done.
Madam Chair, I wanted to kind of say something to that point. Are you done with that point?
Let's go ahead.
Senator Shade. Madam Chair, if you might. So in the situation of Minneapolis being penalized, what, $800,000, I believe Mr. Kroonquist said, are you suggesting that that penalty was Party A is the board, the district, and Party B is the teachers, and are you saying that Party B doesn't suffer a penalty?
Yes, and actually Party A is the taxpayer,
Senator
frankly,
Thompson.
Because the board gets assessed the penalty, but ultimately it's taxpayer money that goes back to the state instead of into the school district to provide programs, teachers for kids.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd argue that staff is short the $800,000 as well. I mean, that's not available to their contract or, you know, to that collective bargaining agreement that they haven't finished yet. Or I don't think the power goes to one side or the other in that. And I also, taxpayer money, it is. It's all of Minnesota taxpayer money, and the money is going back to the taxpayers, I guess, if you will. And maybe we could find a better way to use that money. Maybe, you know, we should dedicate it to something. But I don't think that it's accurate to say that one side benefits over the other. I think everybody loses.
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, in theory, I would suppose that you're right. If all of a sudden Minneapolis is left with $800,000 less revenue that goes back to the state, that could result in teachers being cut and the like. The point is, from the position of public perception, from the position of the responsibility of the school board, when you assess the penalty against one side of a transaction, it puts the onus on them disproportionately to get it done, even though I would agree with you that at least in theory some of the ramifications could flow to teachers. I don't doubt that, which honestly would even more so buttress my point and the justification for ridding ourselves of this, because you would then have a situation where if the bargaining unit for the teachers and the bargaining unit for the taxpayers can't get the deal done, who suffers? Under your theory, which may well be correct, teachers and students. So I'll concede your point, and I think it further validates the reason we should get rid of this.
Madam Chair,
Senator Nemo,
to this point, we'll wait and see what the testimony says. I would venture to guess that those testifying against this would be the ones that disproportionately benefit, and those that testify in favor of it would be the ones that are disproportionately getting hurt. So we'll see what the testimony says.
The market's a wonderful thing, isn't it, Madam Chair?
Senator yes. Thompson.
In summation, what this bill is it's an opportunity to make sure that we continue to employ as many teachers as we possibly can, maintain the most favorable possible student-teacher ratios that we can, and don't lose the opportunity to provide programs and the curricula that have come to be emblematic of a great educational system here in Minnesota. And that's what we need to do. Now, I think as important as understanding what this bill is to understand what it isn't. It is not a policy proclamation. And one of the things that has been mentioned is that many would argue that school boards ought to control these things and that we ought to support local control. A few have even pointed out that I personally am an advocate of local control, and I am. But the fact is, members, this is not a transformation in our policy. This is an attempt to relieve a financial problem that is bearing down on our school districts immediately and is resulting in harm to our students through loss of teaching jobs and loss of important programs and important classroom alternatives. That's what this addresses. The other three elements of this bill, the mandate relief and so on, those things clearly are consistent with my approach that we ought to return more control to the districts. But the fact is, though we have, in theory, local control and that districts negotiate these contracts, when you factor in the requirements of PELRA, specifically the fact that teachers are regarded as non-essential employees and can therefore strike, you factor in the political blowback and the ramifications for the community if that happens, and all of the other dynamics that go on, I think you'll find from the testimony that local control in this area is very much illusory. So you can't have it both ways. Trust me, Madam Chair, members, distinguished guests, when it's time to return control to the locals, I'll be the first guy on the bus. But the fact is, we can't dictate things from St. Paul. We can't have mandates. We can't assess penalties for not negotiating contracts. We can't require certain amounts of employees to be retained. And then when the school boards and the school administrators around the state throw their hands up and say, we're helpless, and we say, oh, local control. That doesn't make sense. You can't do it both ways. So from my perspective, Madam Chair, I think that this is something we need to do in order to provide the classroom teachers that we need to maintain, our student-teacher ratios, to keep the programs on board. Nobody likes to see anybody flat in their income. The fact is that is similar to what we're experiencing in the private sector, and therefore, I think this is something that we need to do. I'll stand for questions and address anything you have for me.
Are there any questions before we start taking testimony? Everybody, Senator Steven.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Cruz, I assume that
no,
you saw
this is Senator Thompson.
I'm sorry, Senator Thompson. I assume that you saw the editorial that was in our packets from the Star Tribune.
Yes.
And do you know where it says that it says in here that this freeze would save $80 million and allow districts to retain roughly 1,000 teaching jobs statewide? Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with that being published, yes.
And can you help explain where those numbers come from?
My understanding is that those were taken basically from some estimates from the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I've actually got some of those numbers here that I'd be happy to pass out to the members if you'd like to see it. The math makes sense, although I didn't give them that math.
And Madam Chair and
Senator Seaman, I think it does also say the Minnesota Association of School Administrators apparently provided some of this information.
Okay, thank you. So are you suggesting in this proposal regarding the freeze that $80 million would be retained by the school districts themselves, or do you in some way envision that this $80 million savings would come back to the state to help perhaps mitigate other education cuts, or I guess I'm just curious of what the big picture is for you in introducing this proposal and how that cost savings will impact the state.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Senator Steven, my concept is that if we don't put these freezes in place and we were to see the raises that are consistent with history, we'd have numbers like you're seeing in that article. If those monies aren't paid out, they would not be sent back to the state. That would be money that those districts would then have to do with what they would like to do. And my assumption is, since many districts around the state are now confronting cutting off of programs, letting teachers go, that they would be able to use that money to retain teachers. So this really isn't, and I'm glad you brought that up, Senator, because this has been, I've been asked, well, how is this going to cure the budget problem in Minnesota? That's not the intent of this. The intent of this is to cure the teacher termination and program termination problem within the districts. So, yes, my concept is they freeze salaries. That money that would have gone to historically typical raises can now be used to retain teachers and programs.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, Steven. I appreciate that response, and I'll obviously take you at your word for that. I'm concerned about, like you said, you're concerned, too, about local control, and obviously different school districts throughout the state are in different financial situations. There have been efforts in the past, in previous years, for the state to capture some school districts that perhaps have fund balances to capture some of that money. So if school districts, for instance, have additional money on their bottom line, this freeze would help that bottom line additionally. No. I'm just making sure that you're not supporting efforts then to perhaps drain any of that money back to the state to help address our budget shortfall.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chairman, that would not be my intent. My intent is to allow the school districts to retain that money, and Lord knows, I hope some of them have surpluses that they're going to be able to use to improve education throughout the state.
Anybody else with questions before we start taking testimony?
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Senator Thompson, did you mention that this is, I believe it's a two-year temporary freeze. It's not an ongoing. This is a two-year time frame to it. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. If there are no further questions, then the testimony. Jan Allswager is first on my list here. Don Sinner, together. You will introduce yourself for the record. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Senators, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. If it would be acceptable, I would like to give my initial time to a local president.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, good afternoon, distinguished ladies and gentlemen of the committee and guests. My name is Don Sinner. I'm a 25-year middle school science teacher from Lakeville. I'm currently the president of Education Minnesota Lakeville and have been a local negotiator for over the past decade. I'd like to share my experiences in Lakeville, specifically with the parts of Senator Thompson's bill. First, the repeal of the January 15th deadline. Past practice in Lakeville has been that EML files to open negotiations in mid-February. We then meet and determine the base with the district in March, and both sides bring a list of issues for discussion during the round of bargaining. In April and May, we begin to discuss language issues. When the legislature settles on the education funding by the end of May, we use the month of June to finalize language and both to analyze what the financial picture of the district is then. Our target is to have a tentative settlement in Lakeville by the time we return when workshop week opens. Two of the last three contract rounds, we've been able to do this because both sides have come in a collaborative effort to get the contract done. The last round, it took us until November 20th. In my recollection, in the 25 years in Lakeville, we have never come close to the January 15th deadline with both sides working together. Second, the staff development waiver. Throughout the past 6 years, Lakeville, because it's the same like every other district, has faced very tough financial situations. EML, which is my unit, and the district have worked collaboratively three times to take the necessary votes to enable the district to use those funds to preserve classroom opportunities for students. One of these votes was taken by the teachers in an effort solely to save the positions of support personnel, paraprofessionals in the classroom that directly support student achievement. It had nothing to do with one teaching position. It was all the ESPs that worked directly with students also. Third, the pay freeze on education employees. During the last round of bargaining, EML, which is the teachers unit, LASA, which is the administrative unit, LEAF, which is our ESP unit, and the SEIU unit, representing the building and grounds employees, as well as our non-affiliated staff, all negotiated contracts which enabled the district to preserve 65 classroom positions in an effort to save positions for the students, classroom opportunities, and address the budget situation. It was a collaborative effort between all employee groups in the districts, and it was all done in a timely fashion. We were done by November 20th. The contract settlement for the teachers was structured in such a way that my most senior, 340 members of our staff, received only enough necessarily to cover increases in health care premiums and out-of-pocket medical expenses. This allowed us to allow our 360 less senior staff, many of whom are working second jobs to make ends meet, to progress through our matrix with a slight raise. Our settlement allowed us not only to save positions of us newest teachers, but it helped them weather the financial storm. As a personal example, I am a 25-year veteran who took home in 2010 $700 less than I did in 2008. All of that due to increasing health care costs between the premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. And across-the-board pay freezes suggested in this bill would actually force freezes also on the youngest teachers and those most vulnerable to these economic conditions. It would probably drive many of them out of the profession. This, to me, simply seems like another shift, putting the responsibility for funding education squarely on the shoulders of teachers instead of on the state, and I understand you have a budget problem, or the local property taxes, and they're feeling the burden also, but it puts it squarely on the shoulders of those delivering the education to our students. All three of these areas in the example show how local control is vital for districts with their employee groups working together in order to have the flexibility to respond to local conditions. The philosophy of with us, not to us, allows us to reach creative solutions to find and create a work atmosphere that is conducive to the students and their learning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Senator. Ms. Altschweiger?
Madam Chair, again, Jan Altschweiger, Chief Lobbyist for Education in Minnesota. This bill, Senate File 56, is one that Education Minnesota strongly opposes. There is nothing in this bill that helps the budget deficit be remedied in any form. There is nothing in this bill that provides for collaboration between school employees and the district to, there's nothing in this bill that will foster collaboration between school employees and the district to solve problems because of the mandate on the freeze. There is nothing in this bill that provides for local control. What is a little strange at this time is we should be fostering collaboration, because when you have tough economic times, that's when you need to be creative. That's when you maybe can come up with some ideas with wage freezes. I'm going to talk about the four big issues. And I would state that these four issues are so big that you could have a separate hearing on each one of them. And we are putting all four of these issues in one hearing. I'm going to start with a safe schools levy. These individuals that would be affected greatly would be the licensed support professionals. These are counselors, social workers, and nurses. These individuals care deeply about the kids and work very hard. I want you to think very carefully about who is affected when we cut counselors, nurses, and social workers. The kids who often see these professionals the most are those that have troubles or are at risk. Maybe there's a family situations, maybe there is a financial situations where they have greater needs. During tough economic times, our social workers, counselors, and nurses are seeing more kids. We need those positions saved. Let's go on to staff development. Staff development provides an opportunity for teachers and the school district to work on issues and improvement of teaching. The way the staff development law is written, it really does empower teachers and the district to have collaborative discussions. I want to remind everyone about the law and what the law does. There's a 2% set aside for staff development. 50% goes to the site, 25% goes to the district, and 25% goes to the district to be sent out as they want to the sites. The law is working. As Mr. Sinner just pointed out, the majority of the school board, the majority of the teachers may annually vote to reduce that amount to anything less than 2%. 1%, 0.5%, 0%. A number of our teacher organizations have done just that. In fact, some of our unions have approached the school board and said, let's have a discussion about this. It has been working. I want you to think of some unintended consequences about this. You have a curriculum adoption, and the teachers say they need more training on teaching reading, something that's very important to Senator Olson's heart. And as a result, maybe the budget is tight. And instead of focusing money on staff development, the school board decides we're not going to spend any money on staff development. You're going to have to study this on your own. And teachers would do that, absolutely. But you have an opportunity with the staff development for the teachers to say, we need this training. And what is even more ironic is that at a time when we are holding teachers to a higher level, more accountability, and teachers are not afraid of that, we are now going to take away any voice they have in staff development to say what they need to improve test scores, to improve my teaching. And now we're going to let and the school boards decide to not have any staff development if they choose. We don't think that's right. And this is something that is also very interesting, I think, is that there are some times where the teachers decide not to reduce the 2%, or maybe reduce it only to 1%. I want you to think about this.
If they are deciding to keep that money into staff development, they have some particular needs, as I've just described. It also means that that money is not available for possible insurance premium increases. It means it's not available for salary increases. See, if they are voting to keep the staff development revenue the way it is, there is probably a very good reason, and it is all based on professional reasons. QComp is also helped to be funded, is funded as a result of some of the 2% set-aside money, and I think you have to ask yourself what happens to QComp, because the 2% set-aside is used for that proposal as well. Let's move on to January 15th contract settlement deadline. You have two handouts, and I'll be referring to those in a moment. As Mr. Sinner stated, the January 15th contract settlement deadline really has forced the parties to come together with realistic offers at the table. And we have seen, after the January 15th contract settlement deadline was in place for a few years, our teachers said, let's get this done early. We saw more people taking classes on getting to yes, collaborative negotiations, interest-based bargaining, instead of the adversarial bargaining. And because of that, more and more districts settled earlier. I would like you to look at the charts that I have had handed out to you. You have two charts. You have one that is titled The Percent Unsettled by the January 15th Contract Settlement Deadline. You will see that the very high bars, 63%, 79.9%, 66.9%, are the years when you did not have a January 15th settlement deadline. When you had the settlement deadline, what are the numbers of unsettled locals by January 15th? Anywhere from 1.5% to, for most of the year, still 5%. Last year, there were more, 10%. So if you want to talk about what is good for kids, the January 15th contract settlement deadline is good for kids because it has forced districts and teachers' unions to come together with realistic offers and get their work done early. The salary settlements before or after January 15th are insignificant. Indifference. And some will say that the teachers have so much leverage. I can tell you that's not true, because school board members and negotiators on the district side will tell the teachers, if we don't settle by January 15th, we're taking $25 per pupil out of the total package that we will offer you or that we would even consider settling on. And why would teachers want to have a $25 per pupil penalty anyway, assessed on their district? Less money to negotiate.
Ms. Alter, could you kind of wind up? We've got a number more on your side, and we're trying to manage this time.
Okay.
So we want to be fair to everybody.
Certainly.
Your handouts are very clear.
Certainly. And I would just point you to the number of strikes that we have. The strikes that you see are a result of no settlement deadline in place. The last thing that I will talk about then is the wage freeze. We represent teachers, custodians, bus drivers, ESPs, the education support professionals, paraprofessionals, secretaries, teachers. This, as I said earlier, doesn't solve the budget problem. Use as a state send money to the school district, they decide how to spend it. So it doesn't affect the amount that you send to the district. Freezing salaries eliminates local control, as I stated before. And I think a number of you believe very strongly in local control, as I know Senator Thompson does. But what we have done now is told the local school boards that they don't have a choice. They may have made some decisions last year about custodian salaries or about secretary salaries that maybe this year they want to make some different changes, maybe more salary, maybe something unique. This takes away their opportunity. Teachers already have been making historic sacrifices.
The MDE actually reported that the average teacher's salary increased just $17 last year. A record number of locals already agreed to a pay freeze last year, the last negotiation round. Minnesota ranks in teacher pay. Their ranking has gone from 16th to 20th from 2005 to 2009. As I recall, about a little over 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we were number 8th in the country. Salaries are not the budget problem for the state or for the school districts. Here's a possible solution for you. Healthcare is one of the largest drivers. More than half of the increased costs to school districts are going to healthcare, and it's going directly to insurance companies. In the past, we've had a statewide health insurance bill for school employees. The Department of Minnesota Management and Budget said that it would save $179 million over 3 years. If you want to save money, we will work with you on a statewide health insurance pool for school employees. Special ed costs, fuel costs, they are going up. There are some unintended consequences of a pay freeze. Even the Bush Foundation has stated this will have an impact on the ability to attract and retain the best and brightest teachers in the state. It also has a negative impact on the morale of the teaching force when we're asking them to do more, perform better, have better test results with less. I will just conclude with an email. I may not be able to find it, from a teacher who made a comment about the wage freeze. She said, "I completely understand. Everyone is hurting now, and a pay freeze seems like the best option. I'm a speech therapist, and I graduated from college with over $80,000 in student loans and am expected to pay them off in an allotted amount of time. I only take home $2,000 after taxes. Not to mention that I would love to get married, buy a house, and start a family. I have no other choice but to get a master's degree, which appears to be a mistake. And with this language, she wouldn't even be able to, if she got a master's degree, she'd have the college costs, but she wouldn't be paid for any kind of lane change. If I don't get a pay raise, I don't see how I will be able to pay my bills and even begin the new chapter in my life. Am I supposed to live off my college income for the next 20 years? Not to mention that I bring money into the district with third-party billing, which only creates additional work that has to be completed in my free time outside of the workday. Maybe it was my mistake to go into this profession. But it appears that government doesn't even consider new graduates and the bills that they have acquired to get their education due to all the budget cuts to college programs. I may have no other option but to leave education where my true passion lies. Thank you for your support in this difficult topic. And again, I would just conclude that there is nothing in this bill that solves the budget crisis. There is nothing in this bill that provides for collaboration. There is nothing in this bill that provides for local control. So we would strongly urge you to oppose Senate File 56, and we will be right there at the table with you to figure out solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alschweiger. We have some folks, Daniel Campo, Chris Moe from the school counselors. I appreciate if you could be as concise as possible, because if we're trying to divide the time, we want to be, unless the opposition wants to take it all, I don't want to allow that. I think it needs to have some support as well if we're going to have a balanced picture. So,
all right. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is Dan Campo. I am representing the Minnesota School Counselors. I just wanted to give, I heard a little bit about what we were talking about here as intent, and I wanted to give a little history and intent on the piece relating to the Safe Schools levy and maintenance of effort. A couple of different things. Look, the Safe Schools Levy came about in its current form shortly after Columbine. And the reason for that was the legislature wanted to have a vehicle of funding to ensure there was a method of money coming in to help for safe schools. In its current form, at that time, it had about a $25 levy. It since was up to $27. Several years ago, the Minnesota School Counselors and several of the other groups worked very hard to get a $3 increase into that Safe Schools levy to help school boards and school districts to hire the appropriate number of counselors and other support staff. What we're finding in studies is that while it was meant to stop things like Columbine, that without having the appropriate number of support services staff, well, basically, senators, by the time a child is seen with a gun on a camera in the school cafeteria, we've already lost. And the counselors feel that it's very important to get to these children before you have that kind of event. Now, right now, currently, counselors are in Minnesota as a student-to-counselor ratio, we're 49th in the nation. When there was local control before maintenance of effort, we were 49th in the nation. There have been no increases in hiring. This was put into place by the legislature as a triage situation, a Band-Aid. The $3 increase happened, and no more counselors were hired. At that point, several members of the legislature said, look, if you're not going to hire more, then at least you can't cut these people because the ratios are appalling, and they put in the maintenance of effort at that point. We're only 1 year into maintenance of effort. I would also like to make a correction in some of this because there's two things that are going on here. One is maintenance of effort, which I also worked on back at the time, and the other is that $3 per pupil increase. Now, if you take a look at the bill, lines 2.12 and 2.13 and into 2.14, it says school district must set aside at least $3 per adjusted marginal cost pupil unit, Safe Schools Levy. That line there up to, let's see, under paragraph A, clause 6. On the very front of the bill, it says that the section shall be equal to $30. That's the $3 increase that the support services groups, school counselors, were able to successfully get from the legislature in an effort to entice school districts to use that money to hire counselors. Now, the second part is maintenance of effort. I don't think these things should be lumped in at the same point because the legislature did decide to do $3 per pupil for hiring of support staff to try and equal those ratios out. The maintenance of effort piece, just to talk about it a little as far as the intent. Intent on maintenance of effort is to try and do a triage, as I mentioned, to try and stop the further slide. We're already 49th in the nation. I understand that that there are people here who would say they would like the ability and the flexibility through local control to eliminate more of those positions. This is kind of like seatbelts in a car, the airbags in a car. The legislative level, I don't believe intent was to mandate more jobs. It was to say this is your floor, not your ceiling. This is the floor. You don't want to go any lower than this. The other piece of this that I wanted to talk about, and let me just take a look at my notes here, is I've kind of covered a bit on the safety. Suicides. The Anoka School District had, and you said nine suicides,
38 attempts last year.
This is Chris Moe. He's the president of the Minnesota School Counselors. I'll let him speak in a moment. Nine suicides, 38 attempts. Let's get back to school safety. It doesn't take much for a child to decide all of a sudden that if it isn't worth, life isn't worth living, that they do end up bringing a gun to school. When we talk about intent, it's not about having parents interacting with their children. We hope all parents are interacting with their children. But what happens more often than not is it's the parents who aren't interacting with their children that are the ones that are doing things like bringing a gun to school and shooting the kids whose parents are interacting with their children. So intent isn't about saying we hope that we have this sort of social norm. It's to say we intend to try and protect all students by protecting those who don't have the same vehicle or access to. Now, just in other things,
Can you wrap up? We've just about used all of the opposition time now in order to be fair to the others. So,
okay.
I think Senator Bonneff, did you have a question?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Mr. Campo, I've actually heard from districts that they, knowing that they desperately do need more counselors, have refrained from hiring because of this maintenance of effort issue. They're so concerned that then their hands are tied. They make this decision to hire counselors, and then they get a budget cut, and then they're afraid that they'll be stuck. So I've actually been asked very strongly by all of my school districts to not have that particular piece.
Senator Bonneff,
Mr. Campbell.
Madam Chair, I'm not too familiar with what districts would have contacted you, but I do know as part of the political process, usually it is the districts that are contacting you and not as much the counselors. They're usually in the trenches dealing with the students, so that may be.
Would you like to give your cohort?
Yeah, and I'll be very brief.
Thank you,
Madam Chair and Senator.
Your name for the record.
My name is Chris Moe. I am the president of the Minnesota School Counselors Association. I also work as a school counselor with the At-Risk Kids down at Park High School in Cottage Grove, and I also work at the other graduate school in their school counseling service center. I've been a counselor for 17 years, and I definitely enjoy what I do. I represent 914 school counselors who are part of our organization. If you look at the ratio, one counselor represents 771 students. That makes about 705,000 students that we're trying to meet the academic needs, the personal social needs, and, of course, the career and college readiness. And we always started, the earlier we can start with these kids, the better. And so basically, I'm just going to piggyback off what our lobbyist said, Dan Camp, was that number of suicides is increasing, the mental health issues are increasing. You look at the students who are dealing with the foreclosures of their homes. So we're not just dealing with the kids who are in poverty. We're dealing with the middle class, we're dealing with the upper class. And so basically our question to you is then, is if you're going to take away the maintenance of effort and our ratios are just going to increase, then what do we do for these students? I mean, they deserve our services. Yes, they deserve a good education. But if we can't deal with these personal and social issues they're dealing with, how in the world are they going to get into the classroom and be ready to learn? So we're always open as an organization to listening to what ideas you may have and looking at better avenues to get more of us in the school so we can serve our students. I guess I'll just leave it at that, and thank you.
We have a question, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything in this legislation that would preclude school districts from continuing on employing as many counselors as they currently do?
Senator Nelson,
Mr. Campbell.
Madam Chair. No, there isn't. They can continue with their current levels at what they choose. And just to tie into that a little bit, we have a counselor who was unable to be here today who was at a ratio of students to counselor at 800 to 1. The graduation rate at her school was 60%. She just finished the class. Let me back up a little bit. The school chose to hire more counselors. Her ratio went from 800 to 1 to 360 to 1. No change in actual teachers. And by doing that and allowing the counselor to work with the students, the graduation rate went to 95%.
You can attribute that to one counselor? That's pretty amazing. That's a great result. But
She's pretty happy, Senator, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. And I think we've got two more. Matt, is it Toburin? Or Toburin? Toburin? Say your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for having this opportunity to speak before you today. I understand time is brief, and so I'll keep my comments limited. My name is Matt Toburin, and I represent the hardworking men and women of our public schools, SEIU Local 284. We represent school bus drivers who drive your kids and grandkids to school safely and to home, the custodians who clean and maintain our facilities, the lunch ladies who prepare and serve the food, the school secretaries who give you a call when your kid is sick, and the special ed paraprofessionals and educational assistants who work side by side with teachers in the classroom. And I'll say that our members are the lowest paid members in the public schools. Our folks make barely over minimum wage. Many of them work second or third jobs so they can cover their health care costs and to make basic needs. And with that being said, we oppose Senate File 56 because it removes local control from the school districts. As you know, there's 60-some school districts in the state. All of them are different. All of them are unique and have very unique needs. And the contracts and the that have been negotiated with employees in one district is very different than another district. And what works in Minnetonka is very different than what works in Lakeville. We have custodians in North Branch who make $10 an hour. We have our special ed paras in Maplewood, North St. Paul. Their entire paycheck goes to health care costs. The entire paycheck goes back to the district to pay their portion of health care. And bus drivers in Thief River Falls don't even receive health care. They drive 9-plus months out of the year, and there's no provided health care for these folks. And with that being said, each of these contracts are different, and they've been negotiated differently with very local, specific concerns in mind over long periods of time. And so that to go back now and sort of impose this will take away that local control, the freedom of the school boards that have been locally elected in their areas to do the jobs that they were elected to do. It'll take away the rights provided in law to the school districts and the employees to meet and confer and to work on their collective bargaining issues at the bargaining table. And with that being said, we hear a lot of talk, especially in these times, about sacrifice. Our members are making sacrifice. Our members have been making sacrifices, and they make them because they see firsthand the devastating effects that the lack of education funding is having on our students and on our schools. And so our members will continue to make sacrifices going forward, but we want those decisions to be made locally at the local level and not imposed from a 50,000 view from here in St. Paul. And so with that,
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Tobin, appreciate your coming to testify. Could you tell us, I assume that the members that you represent, the categories of employment that you mentioned, what is their cost to be a member of your union? What are their dues amount? Is it assessed monthly or annually, or just what is that dollar amount? Can you tell us that?
Mr. Tabir.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, that's a very good question. Our union due structure is made up by the board of our union, which are all locally elected members from their units who are members, and they're the ones who set the dues rate. They just recently, this past summer, voted to lower the dues amount, and I think it's around 2% a year.
And Madam Chair, and
Senator,
2% a year of what? What is the dollar amount roughly?
Of their salary, so 2%.
Madam Chair and Mr. Tobin, so could you give us an estimate dollar amount of what that 2% amounts to, just an average or something?
Mr. Tobin.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, I don't have those specific numbers, and partly it's different because the salary ranges are all so different. And some folks work 12 months out of the year, some 9 months out of the year or less. And so I don't have a specific number to get you right now, but I'd be happy to get that to you or the committee.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Tobier, I'm not asking to try to pin you down on an exact number. I know it would vary, but I'm guessing that it's somewhere in the few hundred dollars annually. Is that fair? I'm just trying to get a sense here. The reason I'm asking I appreciate your testimony, but do your members, are they free to join your union or not? If they want to work in the school district, can they decide not to pay those dues, or do they have to pay them? If they're struggling with their health care costs and they say, well, my health care payment is worth $300 or $400 a year and my union dues are worth that, and I want to pay to the health care provision and not my dues, are they free to do that and still have their job?
Mr. Tribune.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, the employees of the school district are all covered under the PELRA laws in 179A that provides a fair share, so that if an employee does not wish to join the union, that they are not required to join, but there is the fair share. I will tell you that we've seen growth in our union in the last few months, that we have school employees in various districts saying that they're not a part of the union and that they would like to be to have those protections and to be part of that.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Tobin, you can correct me. I believe that the fair share structure is roughly 85% of the cost of the dues of a normal member. But the point is that people must pay the money whether they want to be a member or not. And we do have a structure that requires people who work in the schools and the areas that you talk about that they are required to be a member of this organization. And I think, to me, that I believe in local control, as I believe Senator Thompson does. I also believe in personal freedom and personal choice. And I think if we're talking about people struggling to pay health care costs, we ought to give them the freedom to decide whether that's more important than paying to be a member of an organization. And maybe we ought to visit that as well. So that's just more of a comment than a question, Madam Chair, but if you'd like to respond.
Thank you. I think we have one more. Senator Mr. Piccolo, would you come to the table? Thank you very much, Senator Mr. Tiburin. And I know you can talk the fastest of all, so.
I'll do my best, Senator. Senator and members, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Here to talk about the provision about salary freezes. We are not speaking against the salary freeze. Most of our schools have taken a salary freeze the last couple years, and many of our schools have actually cut pay. What I do want to talk to, and we do have concern about, is the language with regard to this section of the law. By law, charter school employees are at-will employees. They are not subject to PELRA. And this legislation indicates and lumps all charter schools under that provision. Our employees are covered by general employment law that applies to all employers except for state employees and for traditional public school employees. Our schools do have the right to collective bargain. And if they choose to collective bargain, then the law says they become under PELRA. But we have no schools that are unionized or collective bargaining because up until 2 years ago, the majority of our school boards were teachers who taught in our schools. And the law still requires that our boards of education have teachers who teach in the school on the Board of Education. So they are in the management as well as the employees. And so that's our major concern here, that the way the language is written, that it lumps all of our schools under and indicates that this law supersedes PELRA and any other law. And according to the charter school law, charter schools are exempt from all state laws that apply to school districts and schools unless it is specified in the charter school law or another law specifically lists charter schools. So this law would actually put all of our schools that are not under PELRA under those conditions.
Okay. Senator Thompson. Madam Chairman, I think Ms. McQuay can address this. We've talked about this some, and it's not the intent of the legislation. We don't believe that it does cause that problem. Ms. McQuay, could you explain that for us?
Madam Chair and members, the way the bill is drafted, it would read that school districts and charter schools are subject to the salary freeze in Subdivision 1. And in those cases where charter schools are not part of the collective bargaining agreement, as allowed under Subdivision 21 of the charter school law, then it would not apply to those charter schools. In order for a charter school to be subject to a law, it would be under Subdivision 8 in the charter school law. That's federal, state, and local requirements, and it's not listed, and it doesn't cross-reference to this bill.
Madam Chair, I think we would like to make sure that's clarified in the language, so that it does not give any indication because the way sometimes things are interpreted. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to working with Senator Thompson. Continued conversations.
Let's move on to the supporters. Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Board Association, and I think you have some others with you.
Thank you.
Skelton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today. Our school board association.
Would you just say your name for the record?
Thank you, Madam
You know the
Chair.
Drill.
My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the School Boards Association. It's an honor once again to be with you today. I brought two local board members with me today to talk about Senate File 56. Our association supports this and appreciates Senator Thompson's work on this bill. But I leave it to the people who really know the local story to share their input on this. Thank you. Madam Chair, Senators, and committee members, my name is Roz Peterson, as mentioned, and I am with the Lakeville School Board, MSBA Board, and also a commercial realtor, small business owner, and a mother of two kids in high school. I just wanted to explain our situation a little bit more. We have a district of 11,000 students. We cut over $20 million of the past 5 years, and we are in the process of adjusting our budget $15.8 million right now, and this is after several levy attempts have failed. So we are here in support of Senate File 56 for the following reasons. First, the maintenance of effort repeal for guidance counselors. We are cutting all elementary art and fifth and sixth grade band, but retaining all of our guidance counselors in elementary school. And we feel that we lose our flexibility when we cannot be creative to find solutions to still continue these programs. And I want to point out that this is about, we totally value our teachers. We value our guidance counselors. We know that their job is difficult. It's about jobs. It's about retaining this personnel in our classrooms with our teachers and keeping class sizes down. And by repealing the maintenance of effort piece, we will have the flexibility to have a choice. Guidance counselors do provide valuable services, but we would like to also provide band and art as well. One of the proposals would be in order to work around this law, we would be moving some of our guidance counselors as deans into our middle school instead. And the other piece is staff development set aside. We have used staff development aid of 2% to balance our budget with the union's blessing over the past 4 years. And we are very grateful for that because it helped us retain teachers and other positions in our schools. And it is important to have. One piece is, as a realtor, I am required to have continuing education credits every year. And I do believe that staff development is important, but it's a piece of how are we going to have the flexibility to deal with our financial crisis that we have right now and keep these positions in place.
Madam Chair and members, distinguished guests, my name is Kevin Donovan with Montemite High School Board.
Sir Donovan.
We're located in the Northeast Metro, and we have about 3,200 enrolled students at this time. I sit before you with heavy heart, and for purposes of full disclosure, my wife is a St. Paul Public School teacher, and believe you me, before this, we had some spirited discussion over the last weekend. Both my parents were educators, and so again, this is tough to sit here, but I think after hearing Stenson and Gillespie twice in 1 week, I understand the gravity of where we are today. We are heading for uncharted times in our finances as a state, and education and health care are the two biggest drivers. As far as the negotiations for salaries, we've in the last several go-rounds, we've faced kind of in my opinion, a disadvantage with the January 15th settlement deadline. Because we recognize we have to do this, and we may not be able to get the best negotiated salary on our part, but we have to move forward and do that. One of the things that happens is with the 330-odd school districts in the state of Minnesota, when you, as a board, are negotiating these things, people are looking around to see what other districts are doing. So one district might come in low, but several others might come in high. Typically, that's what seems to happen when people start looking at what's going on. Well, you see what they're doing over in Eden Prairie. You see what they're doing in White Bear Lake, et cetera. For us, this represents, if this freeze were to be enacted, it would represent $272,000 to Montemita, and that would represent approximately five teachers. In the spring of every year, we have to go ahead and notify people that we're not going to renew. Most of them are probationary teachers. But what happens is, as a result of this, we let teachers go. And those are usually on the low end of the spectrum as far as salary. And so in some ways, what this will do is help keep some of those teachers, we hope, in the classroom. 78% of our operating budget is in staff salaries, wages, benefits. And so from my perspective, this is really it's a tough thing that we have to do, but I think it's a necessary thing that we have to do. We need to make sure that we have continued viability as a school district to the stakeholders that we represent. Ultimately, what happens is the kids are the ones that suffer. And we've seen this happen when we decrease course offerings. We currently offer Spanish and French. German was just let go. And pretty soon, I suspect, we'll be looking at any foreign language you like as long as it's Spanish. Seven of the last 8 years, we have cut. And we have cut a lot of the low-hanging fruit. We've done collaborations with other districts, our food service. We co-op with Stillwater. We are in a number of different co-ops with transportation just to try to reduce expenses as much as we can. That low-hanging fruit is now gone. So this is really a necessary thing from my perspective.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the witnesses?
Yeah, Chair.
Senator Wicker.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and for each of the school board members, and I was one for 18 years. Appreciate all that you do, but I'm wondering if there's an inconsistency where you ask for flexibility on staff development, safe schools, but St. Paul, save us. We need to have a freeze. Why can't you have that flexibility at the local table when you negotiate?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Peterson.
Thank you. I still feel that there is still more flexibility within those contract negotiations, even with this. There's a finite amount of money that we have, right? And if we can help contain our costs, we can still negotiate within that contract. And let's not forget, thank you, St. Paul, for creating a lot of the hand tied behind our back situation, local control that we have. And it would help us, I think, put that element to the side. For example, there was a question asked if we set aside the $25 penalty, we would never plan for that type of a settlement because that's not in the best interest of our kids. We are always going to move forward and try to come to a settlement before we get to that point because, personally, I'd much rather pay a teacher then send the money back to St. Paul. But I think what Minneapolis came to is like, we just can't take it anymore. We have to make a stance, and that's why they made that choice. But we really don't ever want to have to get into that situation, and that's where we lose the leverage. That's where we become at a disadvantage when it comes to negotiations.
Madam Chair.
Any other? Senator Schreid.
Madam Chair, and I know perhaps this is more for Senator Thompson than people here, but I stepped away for a couple minutes, and I don't know if anybody addressed it. I don't see any language in here that guarantees class size or that positions won't be cut or that administrators won't be hired. It strikes me that that's missing from here. I don't have language, but I'd like to know your response to that because I think it's a pretty drastic measure that we're about to take here, and I'm concerned. I spent my early morning at a group home for adults with developmental disabilities, and it was a very inspiring morning, but the people who work in the home are very concerned about cuts. And I drove away, and I knew we were going to have this bill before us today. And I couldn't help thinking, And the gentleman from the SEIU talking about people who are earning just maybe minimum wage or maybe a little more. We're asking for sacrifice, and I understand that. I think all of us are in this together. But we're in a place right now where there are some people in Minnesota that are, we're going to spare them any sacrifice, and that's people with higher incomes. And it just doesn't seem right to me that we are making these choices and laying these burdens on the least among us, and particularly in the school district, the SEIU employees, the lowest paid. Doesn't seem right. Just something to think about when you drive away tonight.
Ms. Peterson,
Madam
thank
Chair.
You.
Yes, in our budget process, we will be increasing class sizes by 4. And my analysis, if we kept things the same, we would be able to maintain our class sizes that we currently have. The proposed guidelines are at 27 for kindergarten and first grade, and we will have classes in the mid-40s for high school.
Madam Chair, if
Senator
I may. Madam Chair and Senator Scheid, you're correct. I don't have anything in the bill. We didn't put anything in the bill to require districts to do things along the line. And I guess this is where, you know, people are asking about my desire for local control. I have no reason to presume that either of these two folks or administrators around the district or school board members have any less interest than legislators in St. Paul in adequately educating our children. So I don't presume that they'll funnel the money to causes that are illegitimate or not in the best interest of the children. My assumption is, unless I see otherwise, that people like this who get into school administration or run for school board and take this kind of abuse because of their senator, my assumption is they're doing it for the right reasons, because they care about the students, and I'm prepared to leave literally the fate of my children and the fate of your children in their hands. I have every reason to believe that they're every bit as benevolent when it comes to our children as we are.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we have a group of school administrators.
Thank you.
So we can hear that the superintendents are willing to have their salaries frozen as well.
Madam Chair and members of the
Mr.
committee,
mm-hmm.
My name is Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We represent the school superintendents of the state of Minnesota and many of the other central office administrators. I'll make my comments very brief so we can get our superintendents that have come in from across the state to testify.
Thank you.
First of all, we recognize the seriousness of the state's financial situation. As we testify today, please do not take our testimony as lessening our desire to see the state provide adequate revenues for the schools. And Madam Chair, we hope that you fight like a tiger in your caucus meetings to get a fair share of money to come towards the K-12 system. Also, please do not take our testimony as disrespecting the work of all the good employees of our school districts. We would like to see our employees well paid and honored for their work. However, we know that every dollar spent comes from a finite source, and we hope to avert cutbacks in our staffs and programs to the extent possible. With that, we'll just turn the floor over to three superintendents, one from Casson Manorville, one from St. Cloud, one from St. Michael Albertville, and the HR director from St. Francis.
So is Mr. Grant going first?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and thank you for allowing me to be here. Casson Manorville School District.
Say your name for the record. So
my name is Peter Grant, Superintendent of Schools.
Thank you.
Casson Manorville School District is 15 minutes west of Rochester, and that part of the state has seen its share of economic issues. My district has been fortunate enough, though, to be on the other side of that because our population continues to grow, but my colleagues next to me do not. And when we were up here last Tuesday visiting our local senators and representatives, we talked to them about the concerns we have dealing with the $6.2 billion deficit. And we realized that hard decisions are going to be made. And I'm not going to be as eloquent as some of the other people have been about the specifics of this bill, but we look at this more from my position. We either are at preservation or we are at survival mode. And if this bill does not go forward, what our concern is that from the southeast is that we're going to do cuts then, because the formula is going to have to be adjusted or some type of funding is going to change. In order to preserve the people we have in our schools right now and to preserve the programs we have right now, this seems to be the best alternative. Even though we don't want any freezes and we want our employees to have adequate increases in their wages, I would rather have them take a freeze than not have a job. And if we're here in Minnesota at this particular time to figure out how to solve a budget problem but also increase jobs, we're going to have to make a tough decision. And in my school district, we are making those difficult decisions. When we try to figure out how we can keep a person in our school district, it is because we try to figure out how do they fit into the budget. And that is, how do we make it practical for our students to have adequate services? It doesn't matter if it's a counselor. It doesn't matter if it's a custodian cleaning. It doesn't matter if it's a bus driver. It's about preserving what we presently have, trying to protect what we can accomplish while you try to figure out how to solve a significant problem. And for 2 years, I think we can manage our way through with a freeze as long as we can preserve jobs. If we can't preserve jobs, the spiral will not stop. And I know we all have a tough job here to do, but preserving our jobs will mean if I have to take a freeze and that's going to preserve somebody else from losing a job in my district, I will certainly do that. And I think my staff will also, once they understand the circumstances we're facing. This particular bill provides a stopgap measure while it gives you time to think about how you can resolve a significant budget deficit. And if you're going to hold K-12 harmless, then I think we have a responsibility to work with you and figure out a way to make that happen without any significant cuts to our funding. This would be one way to protect that. Because I realize we will have to take one part of this responsibility in solving your problem. We are an important part of the budget. And if we cannot get any increases in funding, the only other thing we can do is either work out a plan where we try to lower our expenditures or we accept a reduction in funding. And the reduction will put everybody in survival mode. Or we will have to shut down some school districts or literally shut down programs. On behalf of those in the southeast area of Minnesota, we would support a freeze in order to protect what we presently have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Question?
Yes, Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Superintendent, do you not think that you could come to that same end result through working with your staff and your teachers? Do you believe that if you came together and looked at the budget deficit that you wouldn't come to the same point?
Senator Bonoff and Madam Chair, we tried to do that in the last negotiations, and it was very difficult. Even without any increase in the structure itself, it's a 3% increase in our expenditures. If you don't have some other entity to help you make that decision, it's very, very difficult. Our staff understand the consequences of what we're talking about. But in the long run, I think this is a measure that puts everybody in an equitable position throughout the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like some clarification on the point that Senator Bonoff made as far as what type of flexibility you have if you were to continue the negotiations such as a freeze yourself. Don't we have a continuing contract law in this state which precludes you from some of those negotiations?
Well, that would be correct. The difficult part is that, you know, our antiquated salary structure in this state of Minnesota prevents us from doing anything that's really kind of creative. And right now, we have to follow some protocols, whether we like them or not, or we think they're appropriate or not. There's some things we have to agree to because that is the way our contracts are structured at this time.
So your hands are already tied by the existing contract law. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is this Mr. Watkins?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Mr. Watkins? I'm sorry.
I just had one question for the previous testifier. Related to that, if indeed you were to even pursue negotiations trying to hold to a 0% increase, I'm asking because I don't know the answer here, obviously. Do you think it's likely or unlikely that if the union did agree to that, do you think it would be likely or that they would agree to that before the January 15th deadline, or would most likely after the 15th deadline?
Senator, I really don't know how to answer that other than in our last negotiating round, we had very little to work with, and we waited to the last day almost before we agreed just because we thought maybe something could open up for a 0.5% increase of some kind. I don't think the January 15th deadline is going to change what we want to accomplish if we agree to this bill. I've never been in favor of the cutoff of January 15th only because I don't think it's equitable on both sides of the table. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I can ask my question after.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, committee members, I think the best way for me to try and stay on track is to read a prepared statement. On occasion, I've been accused of rambling a bit. Thank you for the opportunity to address these issues with you. My name is Bruce Watkins. I'm the superintendent of the St. Cloud Area Schools, District 742. I've been an educator for 38 years, all in Minnesota schools. Today I'm not here representing the Board of Education from St. Cloud. I come at the invitation of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators because of our ongoing and overwhelming concern for the state's educational finance issues. We're all aware that no one sees this legislation as good news. Rather, it's a sign of dire financial dilemma, a dilemma placed before a state legislature charged with both funding schools and balancing state budgets. I start today with this premise that had been mentioned earlier. If we have reached a tipping point where this legislation is necessary, it's imperative that all employees and all bargaining groups be treated the same. In St. Cloud, I believe that we have no overpaid cooks, custodians, bus drivers, or teachers, no overpaid secretaries, monitors, administrators, or paraprofessionals. Like other districts you've heard from, we have hundreds of dedicated employees educating thousands of deserving students while functioning without adequate resources. It's important that no single employee group bear the brunt of this dilemma. I understand cost control measures are necessary at this point in time, and I urge that if this bill is successful, it provide a 2-year time frame that must be used to make progress in adopting sustainable funding and bargaining solutions at the state level for all districts. I'm relieved to see the January 15th deadline and penalty proposed for elimination. In the past 4 years, this penalty has exceeded $500,000 in St. Cloud, over $500,000. At no time did I observe the penalty or deadline serve as an incentive for bargaining. We did, however, experience the pain of its reductions or the reductions it cost. It is ironic to me that those districts which have had the most difficult time achieving bargaining settlements have actually seen the penalty then magnify the reductions necessary to balance their budgets. We might ask, why are we discussing all of this at the state level? Today we discuss these hard realities here because we believe that local control is becoming a myth. The legislature determines virtually all rules and amounts for funding, including rules regulating operating levies. Without adequate funding or cost controls, the reliance on operating levies threatens to magnify the great inequities in districts that already exist. As you know, some districts are unable to pass a levy, while others are receiving over $1,800 per student from their communities. The state must help rectify these inequities. A wide variety of circumstances push this bill to the forefront. In St. Cloud, our special education deficit is over $8 million and growing, and that's despite the fact that those expenditures have been frozen for 4 years. Based on current projections, our special education deficit will rise by $350,000 the first year, or a total of $700,000 during this biennium. And that's even if we continue to freeze the educational expenditure side. That increase in cost to us is due to the proration that occurs at the state level, which causes a reduction of the distribution of the same amount of money, but to a greater number of districts or students. Approximately $1 million of that special ed deficit is accounted for by the state special ed mandates that exceed
federal requirements for IDEA. Our continuing contract costs, if agreed to in bargaining, will include $300,000 of annual increases or $600,000 in the biennium for health insurance increases, $190,000 per year or $380,000 in the biennium for lane changes, all of this complicating a dilemma that our district is facing: a rising child poverty count and an increase in population of non-speaking students. During this session, you will hear thousands of stories from residents as they approach the legislature with their concern. This is my story. I grew up in a home where sacrifices were routinely made for my education and the education of my siblings. I was not overtly aware of them at the time. I did not notice my parents going without certain comforts or conveniences so I could have food, clothing, shelter, and education. Times were such for many families that sacrifice was a way of life necessary for the betterment of the next generation. I feel grateful in my generation that until recently it has not been called on to make similar sacrifices. I spent most of my adult life taking certain things in this country and in this state for granted. Education is one of those things that I've taken for granted. It seemed normal to me that my generation would also look after the education of the next, both for their benefit and for ours. However, in the last few years, we have learned that our economy is not invulnerable, our institutions are not invincible, and our methods of school finance are not sustainable. I do not know what the new normal will look like, but we must work together now and in the immediate future to figure out what changes, what reforms, and what sacrifices are necessary to protect the future of free public education in Minnesota. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. Those were thoughtful challenges, very real.
Madam Chair?
Yep, Mr. Senator Wheeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question of the administrators. Several years ago, the administrators from the schools came forward saying we needed to lift the cap on salaries in order for superintendents, administrators, in order to recruit the best we could for our schools. And that spirit now of sacrifice at the local level, is it time for us to revisit that and reinstate the cap as we had it in light of the economic times?
All I know is that I have recently signed a contract that said, will you work for less than the previous superintendent's total package, and will you have it frozen for the next 2 years? And I signed.
On the question, though. No, thank you.
Senator Wheeler and members of the committee, between 30% and 40% of all the superintendents in the state have frozen their salaries for the last 2 years. We're prepared to freeze them again. We recognize the seriousness of this problem, and our members are going to step up to the plate. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Ziegler?
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Marcia Ziegler, and I'm superintendent at St. Michael Albertville. And I'll try to cut mine so we don't hear repetitiveness, but a freeze for all school employees for the 2 years. We have had excellent employees, especially teachers who have worked for our district for the last negotiations session and accepted a freeze where they did not move steps and so on. They have worked well with us. In fact, I met yesterday with the president of our local union and said I was coming down here to speak and what I was speaking on, because we've always been very congenial. Everything's an open book. We work together on all aspects. I said I don't know how we will approach anything financially this year if we don't have some help in putting this freeze for all of our employees. There's a little part of this bill that says if a contract's in place, which I would like to see amended, because we do negotiate with our support staff at an odd time from our teachers and our principals and so on. So if everybody's going to freeze, I would like everyone to be frozen. So as you go and you think about that, I think it has to be fair. We would all freeze. Everyone would freeze in the district. When I went back to look, I thought maybe numbers were the most important, and $491,038 would be what we would save with a freeze, just on salaries, so you'd know, which would be almost 10 teaching positions. We're a little unique. We still are growing. I'm an envy of a lot of my peers because we're getting more students yet because of where we're at in our location. But it means then instead of cutting that you wouldn't hire the staff and the class sizes go up. So some people said, well, you didn't have to cut. Well, you did cut when you didn't hire more teachers. The school board I have worked for 10 years has had as their number one priority teacher to student ratio. That has been their number one priority. When we're looking at anything else, we have a really, really slim, some people say I could be proud of, central office for the size district we are. We're over 5,400 students. But the emphasis, again, has been from our local board. We want to be proud of what we've done. We've had a strategic plan with a goal that we improve student achievement. We're achieving that goal, so we're proud of it. We've worked hard to do that. But, again, we know what's most important. It is teacher to student. I know there isn't going to be any money. So you said, one of the senators said, well, is this going to help the budget? Well, it's not, but it's sure going to help if we stay where we've been, the same with other costs going up, and even if you look at cutting. We have some other additional funds with you putting the automatic freeze in for everybody. So that is a proactive step that we're hoping that you would look at with this bill. On the safe school and the maintenance of effort, I just want to say I worked for a long time in a school district as a principal where there was only the principal and my counselor to do everything, and they don't have an easy job. But the maintenance of effort is the part that's the kicker here for us. If you have people that are senior, they're paid more. You hire somebody new and they're paid less. You can't do that because you're not maintaining the effort. If you decrease students, not what's happening for my district, but for two of my neighboring districts, when you have to reduce everything proportionately, you can't reduce that one because you have to maintain that level, even though you've lost students. So the maintenance of effort part is the part of this bill that I really am supporting that just doesn't make it workable and equitable. Not cut out, not have counselors, social workers, nurses. They are important as our teachers are to our students. And the last thing, again, because I think of our relationship that we have, board members negotiate all of our contracts, and we have never had to be penalized. But again, I see this as kind of a one-sided. I think our teachers do work with us and say, wow, that's less money. They know how much money is on the table, and they work with us. But I think overall it's kind of at a place where it's really not doing what I think people hoped it would do.
Thank you. I appreciate your patience. We have gone over what we've been assigned, but we've got some heavy issues in education, and an hour and a half doesn't always work. So I think if we can all appreciate that, I would like to finish the testimony. If you would just keep it as concise as you can so we can have some discussion among the members. You are Mr. Raker?
Raker. My name is Jay Raker. I'm Director of Human Resources for Independent School District 15, St. Francis, a medium-sized district in northern Anoka County. I have worked in many aspects of education. I've been a teacher, I've been a principal, and currently, as I said, HR director. I'll be very brief here today, but St. Francis, I'm speaking on in support of the Senate File 56, most specifically Section 2, the salary freeze. As many of the districts enter into negotiations this year with a variety of employee groups, this legislation would be invaluable in helping St. Francis maintain its excellent teaching staff, as well as the support staff that help the district, this district, provide a stellar education for all of its students. We know the state is in a severe budget deficit and will not be able to increase educational funding. St. Francis also struggles anytime it goes out for an operating referendum, and it definitely is not the climate in which any of those kinds of additional fundings would help our school district. This legislation would help St. Francis in the sense that if we have to have just a salary increase of 1%, we save over $284,000, which is approximately 3.5 teachers. If we as my colleagues have mentioned, normal steps are usually 3 to 4%. A 3% increase would cost the district over $852,000, or approximately 10.5 teachers. And if we went even as minimal as 5%, that would be more than likely just steps, a small increase in cells. The district would save over $1.4 million, or close to 18 teaching positions. And those are just teachers. If we add in the salaries of all of the employees in the district, those figures obviously increase. A reduction in staff not only impacts staff, but it impacts students and families, because St. Francis would need to reduce programs. We've lost our enrichment classes. We've lost our art classes. We've lost our fifth and sixth grade band classes. Already we've lost those. Offerings at the secondary level would be reduced. Language programs, advanced courses, we would have to increase our class sizes. We would be raising fees. And many of the support services, office professionals, custodians, bus drivers, would also be affected, because we would have fewer staff. In fact, we have in the last few years cut our custodial staff in half, just to try and maintain the class sizes that we have, and we're trying many ways to save dollars. I'd also like to point out that if St. Francis does have to negotiate salary, the reduction in staff is a reality. St. Francis's general fund balance has been depleted over the last few years because of funding reductions and funding freezes. St. Francis continues to struggle to keep a positive general fund balance. This proposed legislation would not solve the district's need for additional funds or the problems the state has with its funding formulas. It may only allow districts to maintain its current staff with minimal staffing reductions for the next 2 years, and to help districts like St. Francis to keep its general fund from going into a deficit. The need for additional funding will only be delayed by this legislation. As far as the other pieces of this legislation, we do support the maintenance of effort. Districts need the autonomy to make the necessary staffing levels for service of their students and not be locked into artificial staffing. The district also supports the repeal of January 15th negotiations penalty, which it believes to be a punitive action toward the district and the families.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Stump.
Thank you. Could you just tell us what your health insurance increases run? I kind of surmised that it was about one-third of the increases from some of the testimony.
Mr. Riker, or is there somebody else that could address that?
Our health increases have been running between 10 and 14% a year.
10 and 14.
Same with okay. ours. And just a note, like of my $39 million budget, a little over 24 million is in salaries, and almost 32 million is with all the benefits.
Okay, so it'd be pretty
so
close.
So about 62% straight salary, almost 80% when you include salary and benefits.
Thank you. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. The question has come up of couldn't school districts and the teachers' union and the various unions get together and agree to a 0% increase? My question to you is, can you envision any environment, whatever, where that agreement could be reached where there is a 0% increase agreed to across the board, steps and lanes, everything, 0%, no increases at all that could be jointly agreed to between the school districts and the various unions?
Well, Senator Nino, it's not the increase in the steps and lanes because they often increase the step. It's a freezing of any movement up the step.
Yes, Madam Chair, that was my point. Okay. Where the union would agree to put that on hold for 2 years, as well as not having any increases.
Yep. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. That's.
I don't see that as a possibility. One, because of the number of unions that a school district has to deal with, and two, a district the size of ours is really negotiating against or with the state of Education Minnesota, and they have the backing of the state organization behind them.
I guess we could ask, Education Minnesota is here to say, are they willing to go with each local and do the zero?
Thank you, Ms. Siegler. I think we have one more that would like to testify, Michelle Orkut from the Association of Special Education. Administrators of Special Education. Thank you so much, each one of you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am Michelle Orkut. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, and may certainly respects the debate that you have had today. However, I am here to testify on regarding reduction of mandates that affect special education, and I'll be very brief in my statement. I believe you may have a copy of my written statement. The field of special education is a highly regulated area with standards and expectations through federal law. In order to ensure the provision of a free, appropriate education in the least restrictive environment for all students with disabilities, each state must establish additional standards that ensure the implementation of federal law within the state. Our concern is that Minnesota law and rule go well beyond this threshold and greatly exceed the requirements set forth in the federal law. MACE acknowledges that Minnesota has a rich history of providing specialized instruction to students and appreciates the significant value added to the educational lives of students with disabilities through unique Minnesota standards. However, MACE believes that Minnesota should examine all standards that exceed federal requirements and retain only those that are educationally sound and have a demonstrated ability to increase student success and achievement.
Thank you for that additional challenge.
Thank you. We'd be very willing to work with you in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Grathwell, really brief.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Grathwell with representing Minneapolis Public Schools. I'd like to offer a thanks, Senator Thompson, for bringing this bill forward and offer a 100% unqualified support for 50% of the bill. That's practically called half a loaf. Minneapolis Schools strongly supports repeal of the Safe Schools Levy set-aside requirement and the January 15th contract deadline and penalty. As was discussed here, we took that penalty. We did that in the interest of negotiating with our bargaining units. We think we got what we wanted. We'd prefer to not have to pay a price to negotiate with our collective bargaining agents. thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Senator Scheid?
Madam Chair, I have a question for the author or perhaps
okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gretham.
And it's just really brief. I just,
Madam
Chair, if I might.
Senator Scheid.
Okay, in Section 2, it precludes increases as a result of step and lane changes. That's on line 26, page 2. And then if you look at page 3, line 29, I think there's about four lines, 29 through 32. Would step and lanes, how does that have an impact on steps and lanes if future contracts, it strikes me that possibly they couldn't go back and pick those up. Is that what you intend here?
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, would you explain a little bit more what you, I'm not sure I fully understand what you're asking.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Senator Scheid.
On page 2, line 26, it talks about we're prohibiting increases as a result of step and lane changes.
Correct.
And then on page 3, under future contracts, down page 3, line 29, subdivision 3, it says bargaining agreement or compensation plan must not provide a retroactive salary or wage increase that applies to a period. So what do you do with the step and lane increases that a person might have acquired?
I think, and
maybe
this
Senate
is one
Council could
for Ms. McQuaid. I have a thought on it, but go ahead.
Senate Council?
Madam Chair, members, I mean, just, I guess some would have to look at intent, but at least with the language that we have here, it doesn't sound like you could go back to that period. It says, you know, must not provide a retroactive increase. So that applies before that period. So it sounds like you'd have to pick it up on 2013.
So it's an actual freeze, not just a delay.
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid,
Senator
I
Johnson.
Think, and my understanding when I read this was, I don't know that this applies, this section you're referring to here in future contracts applies only to steps and lanes. I think what that's doing is it is preventing any kind of pay freeze to be retroactively applied when entered into at a future date. And I think that would apply to trying to negate any provision in this bill. What I think it seems to me that that's kind of a broad catch-all attempt to say you can't go do 2.5 years from now what you can't do now. You can't go negotiate a deal then with a pay increase and apply it retroactively. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Stump.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Curious, maybe Senate Counsel can help clarify this. There's a number of places in here where we say, notwithstanding any other law to the contrary. Could you explain which laws we are? We usually don't see that too often. We usually try to spell out what law to the contrary we're trying to get around or include.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah. Typically, our committee does try to go specifically list the laws, and I think they're trying to get at PELRA, I mean, which is not within the education code. There is somewhere, I can't remember where it is, where it does mention Chapter 179A, which is where PELRA is. And a lot of times, though, if we don't list specific statutory sections, it may be that also trying to get to case law, that's the only way you can reference it in a statute or in session law.
So, Madam Chair, do we know, if this passed, do we know the impact in terms of, like, ramifications? Like, I mean, are we going to end up with a whole bunch of lawsuits that are going to pop up all over the state and generate a cost? Or we didn't
Mr.
really
Chair,
touch
I've,
on that. But
I've not, I'm really good at making good predictions. I didn't predict that I was going to be sitting in this chair.
Madam Chair, if I may address both Senator Stump's issues. Madam Chair, Senator Stump, with respect to the kind of general catch-all, despite any law to the contrary, I thought from the perspective of a guy who asked for a bill to be drafted, that was a pretty good way to do it, because we got the problem we've got with education legislation, as we do with so many other kinds of laws in this country, which we wouldn't have if I had my way, is we got the toe bone connected to the head bone, right? You've got PELRA, you've got federal laws, you've got case law, you've got contract law, you've got all of these things out there, and I think this was an efficient way, frankly, for this to be drafted so that what it is saying is there's a law out there that says you get a raise, this law is preeminent. In terms of whether lawsuits can come about, anybody can sue anyone for anything. Mm-hmm. But it in my estimation, and I'll defer to counsel here, I don't see that this law is an attempt to change any issue over which the state doesn't have jurisdiction. And therefore, I can't see why it would be a problem. But again, counsel, weigh in. Feel free.
Counsel doesn't wish to weigh in. Senator Bonner.
Come on, you get to bill your time. I don't.
Are we ready to discuss the merits of the bill?
I think that's what we're doing.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
This is
okay,
we've
thanks.
Been through our
so,
testimony.
Thank you. So I wanted to. What?
How late are we going to go?
Pardon me?
Excuse me, Madam Chair, but for those of us that had a schedule.
Well, if this is going to be complicated, that we can't have a bit of discussion and bring it to a vote, do you think are many of you undecided and couldn't vote on it today? Or would you prefer to hold it off to the beginning of tomorrow and take the vote then and have a little bit further discussion?
Tomorrow.
Whatever you want.
It doesn't matter.
We've got an agenda tomorrow, yeah. Too. So it would be nice if we could, if people have made up their decision. I don't know if anything that's going to be said
right.
May change that. We've gotten good testimony on both sides. Are you prepared to vote?
Yeah.
Then, Senator
Thompson?
Well,
for a motion?
Yes.
Yes, I would move that Senate File 56, as amended, be passed to the full Senate with a referral to the Finance Committee.
Okay, it's been moved.
Madam Chair. This is just a kind of a point of clarification. The committee is both finance, policy and finance. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I know the last bill that went out of here went to finance. Is there a fiscal note on this legislation?
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, the fiscal note pertains to actually an issue that Senator Sieben was getting to earlier, which is if, in fact, what we have right now is the actuarials at the state look and say, what is the likely revenue coming back to the state from districts that miss their January 15th deadline, like the city of Minneapolis did and sent us $800,000? They actuarially try to determine what that will be in the given biennium and factor that into their budget analysis. And so the fiscal note attachment deals specifically with that issue, in that we need to determine what impact, and frankly a negative impact, that may have on state revenue. That's the reason for the fiscal note. And as I understand it, that would be the only issue that would need to be addressed in the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, it was my, lack of being clear about the role of the committee. I believe that the way you have, or the majority has it structured, it's both policy and finance. So we won't get it back to see the fiscal impact. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, other than the current fiscal note, and I don't know if we've got that totally definitive. No, we would not. This would not become part of our budget bill, our omnibus budget bill. It would be on its own, because essentially it is not. It is, as Ms. Allswager said, this is not to solve our budget deficit. There may be an impact that we need to examine as to what it is, but the bill that I have tomorrow is going to save some money for the state. It may well cover that difference and a couple of other things. So the one that we've tried twice to save money for the state, and we're going to try again.
Madam Chair, though, I guess I would encourage that we have fiscal notes to look at if we're going to deal with both fiscal impacts as well as policy. I mean, I
okay. If you'd like to see one, I think there may be one here, if you'd like.
Okay. Yeah, I think, at least from the minority's perspective, it would be, you know, our request that if it has any fiscal impact, that we would, you know, be able to have that.
And that's the reason we would refer this to Finance Committee.
Okay, and that would, Madam Chair, that would be true with the bill that was passed out earlier too.
Yes,
Madam Chair.
Senator Shade.
Madam Chair, if I may. I just wanted to say that I intend to vote no on this bill. Senator Nino asked a question earlier about did you foresee or did some folks up there foresee the ability to negotiate something with a hard freeze? And I don't know if Ms. Alswager or somebody can say whether or not that has happened. Have we had? I mean, I know some districts that have had no salary increase. I don't know about the steps and lanes piece, but if I could ask her that.
Madam
Chair, Senator Shide, I'll be very brief. Absolutely. We had, in answer to your question, Senator Nino, we have had school districts that have teachers who have taken hard freezes, no steps, no lanes for both years. Then there are a number more that have taken a hard freeze for one of the years. So okay. This has happened. It is working. The fiscal note that I have seen in past years, this January 15th, will increase your budget deficit because you won't have the revenue coming back. And I'm not advocating for anything like that. And I also want to point out that the lane changes on 2.26, the way I read this language, that means that if a teacher is in their master's program or getting their doctorate and trying to become a better teacher, that if they were paying those college costs for the next 2 years, they would not ever be able to make back that lane change because this puts them, this says no retroactivity. And I think that teachers would quit going to college if they know that they can't make those lane changes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, comments on the bill. I think at the end of the day, we may very well end up at this place. And Senator Thompson, I shared with you earlier that I would have liked to see this bill divided up. And I said earlier in the hearing today that I was going to divide the questions. I'm not going to do that because it seems very clear that it's the intent of the author to keep the package together. So rather than do that, I'll just go on record where I stand on these matters. We have in the past done the 2% set aside. Last year it was in the bill. We've done the maintenance of effort. I think in tough times, these are important flexibilities to give districts. In fact, I think we ought to be giving our districts much more flexibility than we're giving our districts. I would like us to comb through the formula and see which categoricals don't need to be categoricals, how we can give, I think, everything we've learned about being excellent in every way, it starts with autonomy and trust. And so I think that especially in these hard times, it behooves all of us to foster an environment where we empower our individual districts to be as autonomous as absolutely possible. And so I am for all of those things. And honestly, at the end of the day, these are very, very tough times. I think we might still get to the freeze, and I am reserving the right to vote for that at the end of the day. But I'm not prepared to do that today, and I'm not prepared to do it because I don't see a plan. And it's too early for a plan. We're just in the beginning of the session. I want to know. And I remember when we were in the majority and Jeff Michelle would stand up and go, I want to see your plan. And I'd be like, Jeff, would you stop asking for our plan? But I understand it at this point. You know, I want to know the thinking strategically. Where are we going? What are our priorities going to be? How are we going to solve these problems? And where does this fit in within our overall? Are we going to do restructuring? Are we going to do some shared services? Are we going to do reengineering? And how can we best get the teachers to be our partners in those efforts? Because I think we're going to need them. Do you want to stop me? Because I could go on for a long time.
But Senator Bonoff, you're laying good groundwork for what we need to deal with.
Okay.
But if you think that we can have the whole enchilada or whatever you want to call it all up front,
No way.
We know what we are facing. You know, by the time we're done, we may want to turn in our election certificates. But and the rest of you might be questioning our sanity if we didn't. But the reality is, we do need to deal with that. Yes, we haven't laid out the entire plan, but I think our committee needs to be part of that. This is a piece. This is a piece that sends a message that we're going to try to relieve some of the stress on the local district so that they can manage what they have. They know they are managing within limited resources. And we also want to have what's best for children, and that doesn't come from cutting out the personnel of the most important that are most important to that education. All of the things that you're talking about are, whether it's our state departments, we're all going to be dealing with that. Whether we can deal with it in a restructuring or innovation, to what extent, that's all going to be on the table. And I don't know that we should really even attempt to put all of those answers there. That's what our process is for. We haven't predetermined what the outcomes are, even though we would love to have that certainty. So, I appreciate your laying out the very issues we're going to be dealing with, but we're not going to bite off the whole thing in one bite.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, and I see you have some comments to my remarks, too. Going back to our One Minnesota conference where we had Mr. Larry Keeler, I believe is his name, mm-hmm. speak Keely. About
innovation.
Okay, yeah. Speak about how you really foster the kind of innovations that are, you know, game changers, that really shake up everything so that you end up maybe with higher quality, lower costs, all sorts of things. And what I heard was the importance of bringing everybody together to get it done. And so while I'm going to withhold my support at this moment, because I'm going to reserve that option to bring everybody together and do this as a team. And as I said, we may get to the same place, and I thank you for your courage, particularly as a freshman legislator, to just put this out here. I'm just in my own process. I'm not there. I want to hear from more people, get more creativity going, more partnerships. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. And that clearly, there's plenty of room for that, because this is a bigger issue than what this piece represents. This is kind of hopefully to stop the bleeding for a while so that we can, in fact, move forward in a positive way. And I think this committee is capable of coming up with some solutions and working and getting input. Goodness only knows that everybody in the audience wants to be a part of that as well.
Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
So you've made the motion.
I've made the motion.
Motion you renew. Senator Thompson renews the motion. Senator Nelson, did you need
yeah,
to
I,
say?
Yes, I did. I have a brief comment, and I appreciate your patience. I know we're all ready to go here, but I think this is a critical bill, critical issue, and we're talking about our children's educational future. And I just want to say, as a former Rochester teacher at both the elementary and secondary levels, I know firsthand the joys and the challenges of the teaching profession. And I don't think there's anything in this bill that should be construed as not as anything other than doing what is best for kids. And I think probably all of us in this room have great admiration and respect for our teachers and the staff that support them. I will say I have spoken to a lot of superintendents, in fact about 20 of them, in southeast Minnesota. And I will tell you, every one of them asked for these things. They asked for relief from the maintenance of effort so that they did have flexibility in how to make their staffing decisions. They did ask for relief from the 2% set aside, so they did have complete flexibility in how to make their budget decisions. And they did ask for removal from the strike deadline so that there would be a more even negotiations field. Now, I will tell you personally, as I say, a former educator and the daughter of two public school teachers myself, and a huge supporter of local control, this salary freeze part has been the part that has given me the greatest pause. But I will tell you, the piece that we're forgetting here is it's a two-year temporary measure in the times of great fiscal budget challenges. And this is something that, again, gives our districts flexibility to do what's best for kids. It's a two-year temporary measure. So I ask members to remember that we're talking about a
temporary measure in times of extreme fiscal challenges. Thank you.
I would renew my motion.
Secretary will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
Yes.
Chair votes aye.
Senator Bonoff?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator DeCryf?
Yes.
Senator Han?
Yes.
Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Cruz? Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Nino?
Aye.
Senator Scheid?
No.
Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Uyghur?
No.
Senator Wolf?
Yes.
There being 9 yes and 7 no, the motion does prevail. Thank you very much. The motion is the meeting is adjourned.
Right.